This is Jerry Pippin, and we have Jen Sparks with us. The name of the book is The Keepers, and it's 19 years of incredible experiences. Paula Harris is with us, and you've traveled the world, Paula. This is probably the most detailed thing we've heard.
Well, it's wonderful because he can recall it. It's not a hypnotic kind of recall. And also, he's been able to figure out why. I mean, he's been able to reason why they took him, what the program is, and so forth, because so many contactees don't know the reason. Now, what he did yesterday in this presentation was show a documentary that had a lot of famous people, John Macklin, DeHow, just a lot of famous researchers in it. But this documentary was made by a person that was on his mass abduction. So I was asking myself the whole time, was this programmed by the Keepers for us to see? Was that why the documentary was made? Because the man that was interviewing him was in the mass abduction.
Well, to answer directly and then expound on it, yes, it was. What I got to see in the experience, that whole first experience of not being paralyzed, everything was elation about it. Mm-hmm. Elation to the fact that I got privy that there's a plan by these guys, which is an environmental thing. I was privy to the fact that during this mass abduction, I could see all the intricate workings of it, from how they get people, how they bring them on board, how they hook them up, how they put them on this monitor thing to get which I hear abductees say that they're environmentally inclined since they've been abducted, but most of them don't remember why. Mm-hmm. And I know why, because I see what they put them through. And it was elation to the fact that there was one individual that I was paying a lot of personal attention to during that mass abduction that lasted a couple of hours. And then I got to see that person in real life here. And he was part of that scenario. So maybe I should go into a little bit about
that would be good.
What the abduction was.
Yeah, let's talk about
we'll
that.
Go
That'd
to
be
Doug.
Good.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I got pulled. I found myself in a clearing in the woods. And so it was the first time I had ever not been on board. Okay, and I was able to move around. I would say that the clearing in the woods was about 100 yards, like a football field. It almost looked like the size of that. I was standing up, and below me were people just piled on the ground. I'd say 12 or 15 of them, mostly nude. Some of them were in their nightgowns and panties and underwear and nightclothes. So obviously they were in bed when they got pulled, primarily paralyzed, sprawled on the ground. There was one guy standing to my right who was fully dressed. I remember his clothes. He had a short sleeve shirt, collar on, regular slacks, and he wore brown leather shoes. And he was standing up, and he was mostly, if paralyzed is the right word, zombie-like.
Days.
And he just kept going, "I was driving my car. I was driving my car." There was a woman on the ground to my left. She was in her nightclothes, and she was in the fetal position, and she was just rocking back and forth, just horrified. And then there was a gray standing in this group. To the left was another pile of people in the same position with one gray. And to the left of them was another pile of people with one gray. So it was a mass abduction about to take place. So they were gathering people at this point for the other ships to come and get them. So how they got there, I'm not sure. But I figured they got pulled the hard way, judging from the state that they were in. When we saw three lights to the left, and they came, and I'm making an abbreviated version of this, and they one came over my group of people, another one from the horizon just as fast as can be came over the second one, synchronized so beautifully, and then the third one came over the third pile of people. It was an overcast night, so they just looked like balls of light at that point. But the one that came over our pile first descended, and I saw for the very first time the outside of a ship instead of being on board. I was able to move. I could see the outside of the ship. But prior to that ship descending, when I was standing there and this guy was complaining in daze and I was in my car and he was confused and the girl was rocking back and forth in a traumatic state,
yes, right.
The gray in that pile said to me, "Calm her." And then I got it out of order yesterday. I said, "Calm him." It was "calm her" first. "Calm her." And I thought to myself, well, man, I got a job. I'm actually participating.
Yeah, right. You've graduated.
Right. Exactly. You know, so I'm not claiming to embrace alien culture, but it's like the Helsinki syndrome. You know,
right.
You're a trustee in prison
sure,
now.
Right.
But it's better to move around than to be in some corner in isolation.
Sure.
And then I can learn more here. So I wouldn't put my arm on her shoulder and said, you're going to be fine, you're going to get through this, and hopefully I'm going through this quick enough to get this in to where it leads to Doug and your question. I think I am. Mm-hmm. And then I said, then they're going to take you into this room, and they're going to teach you this alphabet. And then the alien telepathic voice said, which was kind of funny, I laugh about it now, which, you're telling her too much, just calm her. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, you're going to be fine, you're going to be okay. The guy, he kept complaining, he was nauseous, he wanted to throw up, he didn't know where he was. So I kept talking to him to calm him. So I was very close to this person. His face was in my face. I was holding his arm, I was holding his hand, I was touching him, telling him he's going to be fine. When the ships descended, I saw the exterior of the ship was something that I thought wouldn't look like. I thought it would look real like a streamlined and stealthy looking, and it was like the bottom of it was like shaped like an egg. It wasn't even perfectly round, but it was white. It had windows all the way around it, and you could see this activity behind the windows of running around and movement, and then it was spherical over the top of it. And then a light came down over our pile of people, including myself, a white, white, bright light with a hue of blue. And when I was looking up at that craft through the light, and the one that descended to the left, and that light came on, and then it was all in sequence and all in order, I just stepped out in front of that crowd, and I had my hands up in the air, and I'm going, they're beautiful, they're beautiful. And I blacked out. When I came to, I was in a corridor. And in the corridor were all the people that were all piled on the ground. They were standing up, and then I was told to lead them. I led them into a room that was about the size now of a gymnasium or basketball court stadium. There was all kinds of activity all the way to the back walls of it. I could see people, and I could see aliens. So it was like mixed working together, just a buzz of activity. Then my next instructions were to seat them, which I should explain what I was going to seat them on. Also in this room were rows and rows and rows, and it just amazed me what I was seeing, and rows and rows and rows of what looked like benches, work desks with these monitors. Now, I didn't know anything about computers in those days, nothing. But it wasn't a computer monitor, it was just a different kind of a screen. And it was to seat them. And as I started seating one, and I seated this guy that was next to me again. So now again, I'm close to this person. I'm looking at his face. I'm looking at his physique. He was the first one. When I seated him, I came back. I got curious. I started looking around. They didn't want me to do that, and I blacked out. When I came to, I found myself seated in front of my screen. And everybody in the room that was, everybody that was, the pile of people that were down.
Your group.
Were seated. And there was maybe 100 or 200 more others from earlier that were seated or had gotten seated from when they were continually bringing people into this room. When the monitors all lit up, they all lit up at the same time. And by the way, something was hooked to us. And I think it explains to a certain degree scoop marks. Because it was intravenous in a way that it was hooked right into your flesh, either in your arm or calves of your leg. And what I felt like that was something to stimulate excitement stimuli. So stimuli would be much more stronger when you look at it because we were getting an environmental lesson. On the monitors came, the first scene was a beautiful, pristine, gorgeous sea with filled with fish, a beautiful blue sky. And so a normal reaction to something that beautiful, you would go just like, oh, wow, that's really pretty, right? But the turquoise and the blue with whatever was hooked up to us, you just went, it took your breath away. You went, oh, my God, the beauty of our planet. It was just so drop-dead gorgeous, and you were just so engrossed by it. It took your whole emotion and just... You were absorbed by this, and that's how everybody was. They were just totally mesmerized by the beauty of these scenes. And it was scene after earth scene after earth scene, and you could tell that these were scenes taken perhaps hundreds, if not thousands, of years ago before the earth was untainted. Just beautiful. And you just couldn't help but absorb yourself. Then each scene started getting ugly, where the sea started looking brown, the fish were bloated and floating. And then the telepathic message for everybody as these scenes kept changing and getting uglier and more polluted and uglier was, you're killing your planet, Your planet is dying. You're killing your planet. Your planet is dying.
This telepathic message that you got from the screen, was it like an announcer's voice or something?
PA, like a PA for everybody.
Uh-huh.
Where usually the telepathy is one-on-one kind of thing.
Was it a human voice or was it a robotic voice?
You hear in your head a voice that sounds almost like your own.
Okay.
And so it's human. It's not like
there's no soundtrack with this.
Exactly.
Okay.
And so it's like, but it's not. And you sometimes you'll hear it in different sounds, but it's definitely not.
Right. It's not, right. Not like going to a movie.
And it's not like you're struggling to hear it either. It's
yeah.
Loud and clear. There's no mistake in it. Like you're not going, gee, am I hearing voices? No. It's
you know
you're killing your planet. Your planet. Yes. And without going into a lot of detail,
get to the end.
Well, after that,
Does it show the dead planet?
It just shows everything from what it was and what it is, and I think what it can be or will be, because some of the bad scenes, which it did the reverse to your system. Now remember, you're hooked up, so there's something
right.
They're pumping something into your bloodstream that's going into your to release the chemicals in your brain to get an extra sense out of this, be it good or be it bad. And so when it came to the ugly stuff, you're just like. You're just not yourself. You're falling apart. You're going, oh, my God, it's awful. And that's what all these people are doing. They take the memory of the lesson away, but the emotions and the trauma of the good and the dark part of the thing are retained within the individuals after they come back. So they're not remembering, gee, I was sleeping, and then I was laying in this pile, and then the ship came and beamed me up. And then I was put in front of this monitor. They're not remembering that, but they're remembering the essence of the message.
Right, right.
So it's an emotionally powerful thing, and it's intellectually powerful. So they come away. That's why it doesn't surprise me when I hear all these deputies saying, well, yes, they're saying that I feel like I'm on a mission to... for the Earth's survival.
But then you had the documentary. You know, did you see this guy again? I mean, did you walk down the street and say, hi, I saw you. You're supposed to do a documentary. Is that how that works?
No, I let it flower. See, and I had to really bite my tongue. I had to bite my tongue. But I learned so much patience with all of this. And I'm not perfect by a long shot. I'm not even close. But when I saw, I was at a conference several months later, you know, and I didn't document the exact times. It could have been 6 months, 8 months later after that particular abduction, a few months, 3 months, I can't remember. I used to memorize all of that, but once I got to a point where I just didn't. But anyway, it was definitely after the experience. And I was standing outside on the sidewalk outside a conference, and it was in Tampa, as I recall. And here comes this guy. With this, you guys are pros with the media. He had one of these giant cameras on him, on his shoulder.
Yes, right.
So he was being contracted out. He had a video production company to film something with this conference. He didn't have interest in UFOs. He didn't have any interest in aliens. He didn't have any interest in the environmental thing. But I saw this guy walking by, and I went, "Oh my God, it's him!"
Yeah,
it's that guy because he was in my face. It just took my breath away, but I bit my tongue. I didn't even say hello. I didn't say nothing. He walked right by, but what was funny...
Well, you had that wife experience earlier.
I was going to stop him if he didn't stop, you know, but I was letting it go. And as he kept going, then he stopped short. And the his body just wobbled with the weight of this camera, and he turned around. This whole thing turned around, and he walked up to me, and we started conversation. And he told me he was there to film... film a certain aspect of whatever that was at the conference, and I knew it was this guy, and I want to say, man, don't you know who I am? I know who you are, but I kept my mouth shut. To not make the story too long, he started talking to me, and he says, why are you here? And I said that I've had some experiences, and a lot of it has to do with the ET thing. I didn't go into any detail with him. I said that... I'm a little different. Now, I wasn't even speaking, I don't think, then. I think I was there because some people said, you should go to this alien thing because of who you are, and whatever the case was at the time. I may have been speaking at that time. I can't remember. But he started asking me questions about the phenomena, and he started automatically getting into it. And I could see the expression on his face from, I don't care, to... this is me.
Right, yeah. We're going to take a break. Okay. When we come back, let's follow up on that.
Okay.
And one thing I'm interested in is basically we always talk about what the aliens look like, the ETs, the extraterrestrials. I want to know what the people that were abducted look like. You're a slim-looking guy in good shape. Everybody in good shape?
No, I see all sorts, all sizes. Oh,
okay,
yeah.
We'll be right back. I'm Jerry Pippen. No, go away. We're at the UFO Congress.
In March of 1997, a huge triangular ship appeared over Phoenix. Thousands saw it, and even now, years later, Phoenix is a place of UFO intrigue, sightings, experiences.
It just didn't look like anything I've ever seen in my life.
Hear about it on The Jerry Pippen Show.
This is Jerry Pippen, and we have Paula Harris with us, and of course, Jim Sparks has held us on the edge of our chair here with all of this. How come you remember all this? Other people don't.
Well, in the early years, I didn't take kindly to any of it, and I've always been honest. I've always had, to the best of my ability, I've had a logical and straightforward thinking, and called called the teapot, called the kettle black if it's black, whatever it might be.
I understand. You make a good reporter. What did you do for a living?
At the time, I was buying raw land in North Carolina and divided it into home sites.
Right.
Yeah, right. But my deal was, and something about me that was always a part of me, was that I was environmentally concerned without even knowing I was environmentally concerned.
I understand.
When it came to the trees on the property, I had in the deed, because you can do it in Carolina at the time, that even after they bought the property from me, that you couldn't cut down the trees except for so many feet from where you're going to build your home. The rest of it had to stay wooded, and I sold half-acre to two-acre lots. So my rule was the trees always had to remain.
So you're giving this environmental message now. Maybe you were selected specifically because you leaned toward that already.
It's
have you thought about that?
It's sorting adding up that way, it seems.
It certainly does. Now, I got to find out what Paula asked you. We got to know the answer here. How did you guys get to making the documentary?
Well, he automatically started, just his facial expressions changed when I started talking about a little bit about my experiences and about the fact that it was related to the rainforest. And he says, I really, because I can remember him saying these things, I don't really have an interest in this subject, but I think it would be important to make, he says, would you be interested in maybe sharing your story and the thing about the environment, and maybe we should put something together? And that's how this thing started.
Uh-huh.
So he lived in Tampa at the time, and he still may live, he still lives in Tampa, or the Tampa area. And I lived at the time on the southwest coast of Florida.
Are you still in Florida?
No,
in
I
Las
live
Vegas?
In Las Vegas.
Okay.
This was like, I think this was like 10 years ago, actually, yeah. And so we kept contact, and then I went into more detail with my story, and I had a manuscript going at the time, so I sent him the manuscript. He just was enthralled, overwhelmed with this thing.
You hadn't told him?
No.
Okay.
And it was hard. And I did not want to say. And I just wanted to see, because this, I try to be as scientific as I can without being a scientist.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't want to encourage it. I didn't want to discourage it. I encouraged where it should be, but I didn't want to say, hey, man, you're this guy.
Yeah,
well,
right.
He knows now because things started coming to him. And that's
okay,
what
that's what I was getting at. Okay.
So anyway, as this thing developed and we started making this thing, I had gone to his house, and he was with his girlfriend. And this was just one thing that was letting to his memory coming back. And he had an abduction while I was over there. And after the abduction, then he started remembering bits and pieces of this mass abduction. He says, you know, these things are coming to me. And I never said anything to him, like, oh, there was a mass abduction, and there was this, and there was this, and there was that. And then it got to the point where he was just repeating everything that had taken place almost, which was, he remembers being somewhere, he remembers the monitors, he remembers the earth scenes, and as the time went on, I said, okay, Doug, let me tell you who you are.
Yeah.
Now, here's how I told him who he was. Mm-hmm. I had a sketch artist sketch this guy long before I met him, because of that scene of the clearing of the woods and everything, I wanted the best memory of that encapsulated. if I'm saying that, encapsulated.
Yeah, his right. Clothes and everything.
Right, like... and so she went. This the one thing about the sketch artist. She was Galante is her name. She was very good about capturing the detail of the faces and the people and the things I experienced in the abduction scenarios over the years, and it's in the book.
Yes.
And I'm not pushing the book. I'm just saying it is in the book.
They can find it.
Okay, yeah. And so so I described that gentleman to my right, and she got the clothes, and she got the face, and she got the hair, she got the physique, she got all of that, and that's him.
And so,
I showed him the sketch. Yeah, right.
what
he came
reaction?
To life. All the pieces started to come together,
yeah, right.
So he got excited about it. So Doug Redonte is his name. The name of the company at the time was Infinite Communications. I don't know if he still owns it, but I'll tell you what this guy went further to do. He went through some hard financial times, like we all do, up and down. He was doing well, went through some bad times. Now he's back up again, and he's got personal aircraft now. Remember when that tsunami came through?
Yeah.
He got with a guy in Germany that, so this environment and helping people is just all ingrained in him. Wonderful person, and he's doing this on a global basis. When that tsunami came through, he got together with this German fella who invented this water purifier. I don't know if you're familiar with it. It's about the size of a briefcase. You can put it in a cesspool. It doesn't have to have power. It works on, literally, and pure water will come out. It does like 30 gallons an hour.
Wow.
And it's not like some secret thing. It's out. It's like $2,000 or $3,000 for a piece for this thing. So he invested his money with this guy to get it out to those people that were stricken over there, especially the workers that were working and drinking water that had cholera in it.
Right, right.
Because people would come, young men and women were coming down by the thousands from India, where it wasn't trouble, to help to uncover the dead people and the sick people. They were volunteering, and they were literally going in that water with their hands and drinking it as they were helping these people and dying from disease. Doug couldn't stand the idea of that. So himself and this German man with their money and his planes and all that stuff flew these water purifiers over there. So he still gets involved in this stuff, you know, quite heavily. So from seeing someone on board under that scenario and seeing how it flowered and seeing how his heart was into that documentary, because he made that. Now, he's always said it's not good enough for sale. He says, I don't want it for sale. It's for educational purposes. It's not the quality in his mind that we should sell it. And so we tried to move it a little bit here and there for educational purposes, but it's not for sale. It's not a commercial enterprise. It's just to, you know, educate the public.
Do you think the keepers are proud of you guys for being interested in the environment and doing things like this now? Is this part of the object, the reason you guys were grabbed?
There's more to it, and see, I'm tight-lipped about things for a reason.
Well, I'll
share something with you.
Okay.
Yeah, of course I will.
Okay.
But I'm tight-lipped about certain things for different reasons. What I've learned is when things are out of sync and I talk ahead of time, it does more to mess it up than it does to help the situation.
Okay.
So, yeah, the answer as far as pride, that's an emotion. When you talk about grays, I don't think there's pride. There's no ego there. When you talk about the reptilian beings who get the bad rap for everything for whatever reason, in my experience,
mm-hmm.
No, they're the good guys. There are some emotions there. So, yes,
so
it would be a
sense. So
you're
saying the reptilian are good guys. In other words, they have emotions and they are people. They're more people-oriented.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, caring.
Caring.
They talk to you. They feel. And they're extremely intelligent like the grays are. They have the technology like they do. Now, there may be species that are just rotten, terrible people, because I've heard about women being raped and all these other awful stories regarding that. But I think there's different groups and different races. And the ones.
And again, they never told
you,
they don't have a name for themselves. We're calling them reptilian. But I'm sure they don't call themselves reptilian. They don't have a name for themselves.
You know, and the silliest thing with me is that I'm so... non-selfish when it comes to being around these guys, because I don't ask questions like
what do I call you?
You or this and that, but I ask them to do simple little things that mean something to me, like before we part, can you wave? Now here I have creatures from other dimensions on the other side of the galaxy with all this technology and all of this knowledge, and I ask them something stupid like, oh, when you go, can you wave goodbye?
Mm-hmm.
Because I just want to see something that...
Right, verifies.
Have you built up any relationships with anyone?
Or
is it possible?
well, when I say personal. Tight-lipped about some things, I'm not trying to be facetious.
Sure.
I'm in a sensitive area now because I want it to continue.
Right.
But this is what I do, and you can be assured of this. An interaction will take place that I know I shouldn't talk about yet. I let several months go by, and then I share it for two reasons. One is the trail is now cold. Because there are people who would like to follow you and track you and everything or whatever. The trail is cold. And secondly, I get the full picture or a more complete picture because as each interaction takes place, it creates a picture and an answer. And then when I go into talking about it, now I've got the beginning, I've got the middle, and I've got the end, if I'm making sense. So yes, there's interaction. Yes, it's evolved. Yes, it's in a much better way. And I know certain things now. I know for a fact that time travel, it's not just possible, it's done. It's routine. I know that the biggest push is not just the environment, and this is something I'm just getting from them now, which is about our own longevity. The problem we have as a species is we don't live long enough. The human lifespan is too short to be totally positive. In other words, about the time good people start to figure it out, unfortunately, we die.
Right.
So it puts us in a position to constantly make the same mistakes over and over and over and over and repeats itself and repeats itself. And you even know by our children when you're teaching children and you're teaching them your life's experiences, they're going to either take a third of what you said or two-thirds of what you said and trash it. And they still got to go through it themselves.
So they're changing this thing about the life expectancy?
They want to see us. This is what they know we can do. And this is Yes, this is the latest with me, myself.
In other words, it's kind of like the Army slogan, be the best you can be, and then we're not there yet.
But we will. Meaning that you won't stop dying is a message. Meaning that we can extend our
life. So we can control
life.
Our own longevity?
Because we learn, yes. The resources are here. The technology is here. The money is here. It couldn't be a better place, a better time than now to change this. And all the resources are here because quite frankly, if you live, let's say you're a very good person, mm-hmm. and you lived 500 years longer than you normally would now.
You could do a lot more.
What would you,
a lot of experiences to bypass things.
Would the world not be a better place?
I agree.
Yeah, you'd learn.
And if you
you'd
had
graduate.
Millions and billions of people, you were learning by mistakes and literally retaining it and learning it and not making the same mistakes.
You graduate to another level.
The bumper music's going. The clock's got us. The name of the book is The Keepers. Jim Sparks is the author. Incredible, Jim. We're going to have you back someday.
I'd love to.
It's just an unbelievable story. Paula, you have a final statement or question?
I just want to thank Jim for sharing with us, because when he does it for all humanity, and it's a real gift. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jim Sparks.
Thank you.
And our location producer was, can you believe this, Eileen did a great job. But finally, Roberta Scott showed up at the end to cut it off. And our editor has been Jane Swartley. Until next time, cheers.
The doors are finally open at shopjerrypippin.com. Explore our new iShop. It's open and growing. You can use any major credit card or your checking account with our PayPal connection. Our first edition t-shirt selections features three different Jerry Pippin UFO files designs. In addition, we will be adding collector t-shirts from select UFO conferences, as well as several novelty items. Check us out at shopjerrypippin.com.